The following announcement has been paid for by Perched on the Top Rope.
What's up? This is Bobby Stevenson, and you're watching Perched on the Top Rope.
Welcome, everyone, to Perched on the Top Rope. And as you can tell from that show opener today, we have Bobby Stevenson on the show. Bobby, how you doing today?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And the first thing I notice is you and I are both rocking some pretty cool headgear right now.
Hey, gotta represent.
Oh yes, absolutely. The Stevenson wrestling hat.
We got the shirt. We got the shirt too.
And we've got shirts. where can fans get that?
Yeah, so all my shirts and hats, they're all linked in my bio. I also just made a wrestling page of Stevenson Wrestling. You can also find my shirts and hats in that bio. Second that, if you want a hat, you gotta personally reach out to me. I don't have those on the website, but if you want a hat, you gotta personally reach out to me. I will answer your DM when it comes to buying a hat or any merchandise or whatnot. But that's where you can get my stuff.
Awesome. And where can fans follow you to DM you for a hat and a shirt?
Yeah, so my personal page is Bobby Stevenson. And then my wrestling page, which I'm starting a wrestling club out here in Central Florida, it is Stevenson Wrestling. And the link will be right there in the bio. I made it really easy and simple for everyone to follow.
Awesome. And fans, we'll have links in our descriptions as well. And fans, I'm wearing one of these hats. They are super comfortable. They are super light, which is great because if you're somebody who gets, you know, if you wear a hat for a long time, I've had this on since 8 a.m. It feels great. It's super comfortable. And if you're somebody who has long hair, like I do,
perfect.
The back it fits perfect. It's comfortable if you have long hair, whether you have it up or you have it down. So make sure you reach out to Bobby and grab a hat and a t-shirt today. Bobby, thank you for the hat. I absolutely love it. Fans, I reached out to Bobby because I DM'd him and purchased a hat. Like I said, it's super great, great quality. The inside even has like a visor thing with the flap, which is great.
Great stuff. Look at that. Check that out.
Yeah.
I can't see right there. Oh, no, right there. Yeah.
Yep. There we go.
Good stuff right there. No cheap stuff around here. No cheap stuff.
Yeah, no, there's no cheaping out on this. And it's great quality. Bobby, what did you think of your WWE, the tryout process?
My tryout was different. So mine was more so, I know like a lot of people, they go like to the SummerSlam and all those other tryouts and stuff like that. I personally got a personal one where they flew me in and, you know, I tried out for a week. You know, originally they only wanted me to come in for like a few days, but, you know, I was really interested in wrestling and I really wanted to, you know, get the opportunity. So I wanted to make sure I presented myself the best way possible. So I told them, I was like, hey, I would like to come possible, you know, Monday through Friday and just so I can learn and, you know, see everyone and learn it. And then instead of being in and out as quickly as possible, I want to really present myself and show what I can do.
Awesome. And who was there part of your process, part of the process for you?
It was just me. Yeah. So one of my favorite coaches, Robbie Brookstein, I showed up a little crazy because I almost missed the tryout. Okay, I'll rewind a little bit. So I was at the airport flying into Florida. I packed a bag and, you know, it's the bag I always use for hunting. So it's my hunting bag. All right. So I had, you know, this thing, you put hunting stuff in there. I had guns, bullets, and, you know, whatever you need for hunting, it was in that bag. And I mistakenly didn't search the bag and clean the bag out good enough because when I went through the airport security, at the bottom of the bag was a bullet. And so I was like, why is my bag getting taken right now? And I saw like through the scanner, I seen like a little metal piece like the size of my pinky. Now I was like, oh bro, it's a bullet. And they cleaned all my stuff out like right in front of everyone. And I was scared. I thought I was gonna get arrested. I was like, this is it, you know, dream's over, it's not gonna happen. I'm gonna be in cuffs and they're gonna be taking me to the jail. And so they open the bag, they take all my stuff out, and they grab the bullet at the bottom. And I was like, crap. And I was real apologetic about it. I was like, yo, this is sorry. I'm sorry. Like, this is my hunting bag. I didn't clean it out good enough. You know, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to do nothing crazy here. And thankfully, they were just like, they literally just took the bullet and put my stuff back in the bag. And like, you're good to go. I was like, I thought it was over with. I thought it was over with. So I fast forward a little bit. I get in on a Monday. I'm supposed to jump right into class with Robbie Brookside. And he had like Leon Ruff in there. Scripps was in there. And a few others were in there. They're in there. So, but before I had to go to class, I had to like do like some medical stuff where they just like, you know, the basic check your blood pressure, make sure you're fit to go in the ring or whatever. And I was so nervous because, you know, it was just like a big opportunity. A lot was riding on that. And my blood pressure was so high. My heart was like beating through my chest and I couldn't calm down. I was like, I can't calm down right now. And then like, hey, like if they're like, if you're any older, like in your 50s or 60s, we'd probably be calling the ambulance because we think you're having a heart attack. That's how high I was. And heart was just pounding and pounding and pounding. So they're like, hey, take your time, go for a walk or whatever. And this is after like they already checked, they had like multiple doctors check my blood pressure and stuff like that. And then I went for a walk. I don't know if you know where the PC is at. It's like a long like street where they have like, it's just a long street. And I went for a walk. I was like doing everything. I was praying. I was calling a few people, walking slow. Like I took my shirt off. I laid down in the grass just to like try to like calm down, like some yoga type of stuff. And thankfully, you know, like an hour into the class, like they rechecked my blood pressure and I was able to go in. And so it was mainly just like sitting there watching and things of that nature. But like part of me was like, I wanted to get in there. Obviously, everyone in there was far, far more ahead of me. So I was like, what can I do to like, I'm not going to just sit on the side. You know, so I asked Brookside, I was like, hey, coach, you mind if I, you know, you got anything I can do, like some rolls or flips or whatever that I can do? And he was like, oh, like he was into it. You know, I was trying to like present myself. And he let me, we just ran the ropes, did rolls, took some bumps. You know, funny, like my first bump I took, I bounced my head off the canvas. I no-sold it. I was like, I was good. I no-sold it. I had no self about it, bro. I just got here. I can't go out for nothing. And so he had me. He was like, after we did the run of the ropes, he was like, all right, lad, because he's from the UK. He's like, all right, lad, time to take a bump. So what he did was he had me grab the second rope, squat down, just go back and take a back bump. Did that. Boom. I was like, oh, crap. Like immediate headache, like right in here, like in my temple. And then he was like, no, you got to do is just pretend you're tucking your shirt and go back and smack the mat. And I was like, all right, cool. Tuck the shirt, pretend I was doing it. Wham! Did it a few times. We were good. I had a headache for the rest of the day. But it is what it is. So that I did that for like, you know, the whole week. You know, I even took like the initiative to like jump into other classes. Like even though I didn't know anything, I was like, yo, you mind if I just jump in to run the ropes with you guys? And it was kind of cool because Gerald Briscoe, he came up. I think he lives in Tampa. He came up for the week and like pretty much just like watched over me and helped me out. And we went out for dinner and stuff like that. Matter of fact, I got a cool story for that. Let me grab it real quick. Let me grab something real quick.
Okay. And in the meantime, fans, you can go to youtube.com/perchedonthetoprope or go to Apple Podcast Perched on the Top Rope to hear and watch this interview.
We're back. So back to Gerald Briscoe. You know, he came out, he was helping me out and stuff like that, just watching over me, you know, giving me pointers here and there and whatnot. And then later that evening, we went out to Texas Roadhouse and we were just having dinner, just talking about, he was teaching me about the business, just having a great conversation. And because he loves amateur wrestling. And we were just talking and stuff like that. We went out to eat, whatever, whatever. And I always like, I'm a big concert goer, so I always like save the tickets or save something just so like whenever I have the opportunity to like make a little display on the wall or a corner or glass. Mm-hmm. And I remember the waitress walking around and they gave us a thing for a a free appetizer, like a little free appetizer thing. So when him and I went out, and I was like, oh, this is a pretty cool opportunity. You know, I'm trying out for WWE. I'm having Jared Briscoe come and watch over me and help me out. I'm having dinner with him. And I was like, let me save this. So I still have this. The Texas Roadhouse. Can you see it? Hold on. It's a blurry on your end?
Yeah, it's blurry on my end.
Hold on. Let me see if I can get it right.
Oh, there we go.
This way. Yeah, yep. It's a Texas Roadhouse. Like a free appetizer thing. And the date on it is January. No, that's the expiration date. No, but yeah. So I saved this from the time I went out for dinner at Texas Roadhouse with Gerald Briscoe, because I always wanted to take little important things. Yeah, get the focus. There it is.
Yeah.
I always take like certain things to like memorize, like remember the moment and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I still have to save. I've had this like saved in my wallet for like 4 years now. 4 years I've had to save. This is the first time I've actually taken it out. So the perch of the top rope, this is some exclusive stuff on that right here.
That is really cool.
Yeah. So I've saved this because, like, you know, I was like, man, what if I, you know, this is like the stepping stone of something that could be great right now. It's like, what if, you know, you think back on it, you're in the business for 15, 20 years, you know, and whatever happens in life. And like, I have something saved from this time with Gerald Briscoe. So I always kind of cherish the small things. And then he was great. So the back to the tryout, it was just a week long, just doing running the ropes, you know, rolls and, you know, blow up cardio drills and things of that nature. It was great. And then I jumped into a few other classes and I did a little promo here and there and just like walked around, made sure everyone in the building seen me, you know. But yeah, that was pretty much it. It was kind of a luxury because I didn't have to do all the crazy stuff that the newcomers have to do in their tryouts.
Yeah.
So I was thankful for it, but no, it was great. That was great. So I'm still real close with Roddy Brookside to this day. Great guy. He's awesome. And Briscoe awesome.
Man, that's really incredible. And you have your tryout process, and I had known who you were because I was an amateur wrestler. I wrestled D3 at Oswego State University. And I'm curious, did WWE ever give you a reason why they wanted you to not go by your real name?
No, bro. So, like, when it came, a lot of people don't know this when it comes to names, because, like, fans give a lot of crap when it comes to, like, newcomers and their names sometimes. It's, oh, why'd you pick that name? Why'd you pick that name? So, like, the name process is, you know, if you're doing your thing, you're progressing how they see you, how they want you to progress. Eventually, you know, you get a meeting, like, hey, we're at the point where we want you to start picking names. And it's kind of exciting times. Like, it's like you're getting an opportunity to move forward. Like, you know, things are, you know, hopefully moving forward with the name change. And I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to keep my name. And then they were like, oh, no, we can change your name right now. But it's like, you know, your brother's Gable at the time was drafted to Raw. He was like, well, once you get an opportunity to go on Raw, you know, we can change your name pretty easily. And I was like, okay, you know, I'll deal with it. So, like, the name Damon Kemp came from, I was just on Google. They're like, hey, we need some names. And I was like, all right, I'm going to Google. I literally typed in tough names, like tough first names for wrestlers. And like a bunch of names came up, like Damon and all this other junk. And I was like, did the same thing with the last names. I was like, tough last names for a wrestler. I had a list of like first and last names lined up. So what I did was I like sent it over. Then I was like, I literally put each name, like, you know, like when you're in middle school, you got the names, you do the little spider web thing.
Yeah.
Like that. And I did that and I sent it over. And then they're like, okay, cool. And then like a few weeks passed and I was in like promo class. And then one of the writers was like, what do you like better, Diego or Damon? I was like, I'm not much of a, I don't look much of a Diego. Let's do Damon. Cool. And I was like, okay, cool. Like Damon Kemp. I was like, all right, cool. We're on with it. And then it's funny because like right after my first match with Andre Chase on 205 Live, you know, I opened the internet and I seen, you know, I guess there was some guy that killed two people in Daytona or something. And his name was Damon Kemp too. So it was funny because I was like, yo, I asked someone, I was like, no, there's a guy that killed someone, right? You know, we have the same name, Damon Kemp. And then, oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry. It's not that big. It's not that big. I'm like, bro, it's that big because you Google Damon Kemp right now, you're going to see him. You're going to see a 205 picture of me, and then you're going to see a mugshot and some guy screaming in the courtroom. So we stuck with it. And no, that's how the name game goes.
Okay.
But, you know, I actually wanted to keep my last name because, like, it felt like I had some weight already coming in. And I was like, man, why don't I change my name? You know, we already got something pushing, you know, before I came in the door, you know. And they're like, no, we'll keep it for now, but it's always a possibility of changing it. And I was like, okay, cool. So we just stuck with it.
And I Googled the name too. That's like how I found out about the whole story. Did any Florida fans give you a hard time about the name at all? Because, like, when I looked it up, the person was from Florida.
He killed people. Like, he killed people somewhere around here.
Yeah.
And then I was like, but, like, it was funny. Like, the first, like, 4 or 5 months, after every time I would do a match, I'd see, like, there's a GIF of the guy. And they would always like, oh, Damon Kemp's a murderer or whatever. And I'm like, bro, they'll just put the picture and just, like, troll me a little bit. But I was like, whatever. But eventually we worked out of that phase.
Yeah, right. Thank God. Because that right. Bringing up your brother, did you and your brother ever talk of, you know, high hopes of, you know, having a one-on-one match together in WWE or even forming a tag team down the road together?
Yeah, that was kind of like, well, it's funny. I was his first match, ever match. So at the Performance Center, we do a thing. It's called PC Live, just Performance Center Live. And, like, every Friday at the time, because we weren't doing coconut shows, they would just do, like, match cards, you know, every Thursday or Friday, every other Thursday or Friday. We would just do matches. And Gable was coming down and training. And I was his first match. I saved that, too. I saved the match card. I got the match card still. Just something to, you know, something cool that we both accomplished. So I saved I saved the match card. And I was his first match, and I was still pretty new too. And he hardly had any training, so I was kind of have to, like, the blind was leading the blind, but I had a little bit of experience. But it was also, like, a great opportunity for me to show everyone that, like, I'm paying attention in class and I can guide new people, you know?
Yeah.
With how new I was too, and so yeah, no, there was talks of, like, potentially, like, tagging up and doing stuff like that. You know, we had talks with, like, we would do, like, six mans on live events where he would team with the Creed brothers. He would always team with the Creed brothers, or he would do, like, a singles match. We'd always do, like, six mans, but we always ran the story of, you know, I was, like, the crappy, well, I was a heel and they were running babyface. We always just did the thing where I would, like, be real cheap with him. You know, like, one of my guys would take advantage of him, but I'd hurry up and tag in. I'd hurry up and jump him. Hurry up and tag back out. And then he wants to fight and he can't fight because I'm already tagged out, whatever. And so it was good because I forgot where we were at. I don't know if we were at Fort Pierce. So we were somewhere. It was, like, one of our bigger crowds. I think we had, like, no exaggeration. We had, like, 700 people there. We had that place up. Like, the heat that I was getting, and, you know, just from doing that. And I was like, dude, we got something cool, like, special here. You know, if the opportunity comes to, like, do it on a bigger stage, this is gonna be, build it right, it's gonna be pretty cool, because, like, this is just a match on a random Friday night in the gymnasium. And they were up for it. But it was kind of funny too, because, like, we would always go against each other and, like, these live events, and, like, people see him and they see me, and then, like, it's funny because I'll be on the apron and I'll just, like, look around and I'll see, like, parents and kids, and, like, oh, they're brothers, they look the same now. I was like, well, they already know, so it's just like, all right, so I guess it just built to, like, the comedy of when the younger brother beat up the older brother at the end of the, when it was time for the comeback and stuff like that. But yeah, well, there was talks of, like, you know, if we were ever wrestled, you know, it would be like a WrestleMania thing, you know, that's what we've been told and stuff like that. And I'm not sure about the tag and stuff. Hopefully the tag stuff would have happened, like, you know, after we had the big match or something like that were to happen. But now, unfortunately, it didn't happen, but hopefully, you know, we can circle back sometime, you know, always that option too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's something I would personally look forward to, because like I said, I grew up in amateur wrestling and, you know, wrestled in college. So I had already known who you were through college wrestling, collegiate wrestling, and seeing your brother in there, I thought it would have been like a perfect opportunity. You know, and speaking of, you know, opportunities, there's something that is cool that wrestlers, you know, get, and that tends to be the merchandise within WWE and NXT. And you got to be part of that. So what was it like for you to be able to be part of like a rookie card status and be able to be part of the card collecting,
bro,
in wrestling?
So all that stuff, card. So it was like coming in, I had some checklists I wanted to do, some small checklists I wanted to accomplish. One was, you know, have my own card, have my own action figure, be in a video game, and have my own shirt. And then I held the Heritage Cup, so technically I was a champion. And so I checked off three of those. I really wanted to do it. I would have thrown a party if I would have got an action figure. I would have bought all of them at once. Like, but it was cool because it's funny with the cards. I never knew I had a card. You know, and at the Performance Center, fans always send their fan mail so us to sign it and send it back stuff. So I found out I had fan mail, and I opened the fan mail, and I'm like, there's a card in there. And I was like, and it's like a Panini card. And I never knew I had a card. And like, I had no idea a card was even made of me. And like, so all the cards that I have are ones that like, so like, like I said earlier, I'm big on like collecting certain things. So I was like, all right, they would give me like, you know, like a stack of like 1,200 cards to sign, but I had to like send them back for like your royalties and stuff like that. And I was like, yo, can I get like a, you know, can I get like 500 cards for myself? You know, because like, you know, when I have kids one of these days, they're not going to believe me, you know, if I don't have proof. So what I did was I saved a lot of the cards, and then I actually went out and like I bought a few on eBay just so I can have, because it wasn't like one of those cards like you just go to the store, oh, I want a Damon Kemp card. You had to like buy the whole pack and with hopes of pulling yourself out of the pack. And I was like, I ain't doing that. And then so I bought a bunch on eBay, and I saved a lot of them. And then the real cool card that I want to get my hands on, it was like, I don't know the name of the card. It was like a little, it was thicker. Like it was like almost like a poster, like a thicker card material. It was like this thick. And I signed like 1,000 of them, and I had to give them back. And I was like, I want this card. This is a pretty cool card. I want to have them and stuff like that. But it was always funny because like fans would like show up like at live events. Like fans would stand outside and they want me to sign their cards. And like there was one fan. He had like some cool card, some cool colors. It was like my gold card. Never knew it was out there. And I was like, dude, where'd you get this card? He was like, oh no, I did this and this and this, and I signed it for him. And I was like, well, if I'm to sign it next to live event, you bring me one. You know, so I had a little fair, a little bargain going on. And so he brought me the card. I have it saved. I have like 100+ of them saved, you know, wrapped up. And I had no idea I had a card. But I was like, I just wish that there was the thing with like, hey, Damon, here's your merchandise. And you can keep it. Here's 1,000 cards. You know, save it. Throw it in the box. But that didn't happen. And the video game thing was also funny too, because I didn't know I was going to be in a video game. So... I had no idea I was going to be in the video game. So like, it was like September, or it was like early, late summer. And then the 22 was out. 2K22 was already out. And I got scanned for like the potential to be in 23. You know, it's funny because like when they tell you you're going to get scanned, you get all excited. Oh man, I'm going to be in the video game. Blah, 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 blah. But then it'd be like a little thing like, you're getting scared for the game doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be using the game. It's just supposed to happen. Not that am I getting the video game? And so the 2K23 came out, and I didn't know they did a thing where it's just like the packs, they did like a pack like every few months or whatever. And you know, I was training in the ring, and one of my boys, he texted me. He was like, "Hey, bro, no way, congrats!" And I was like, "On what?" And he was like, he was like, "Check the internet." I looked on Twitter, opened Twitter, notifications were blowing up, and I seen it was like the bad news pack with everyone on the front, like Wade Barrett and all those other, a few other people.
Yep.
And I was like, "Bro, I'm in a video game." I was all hyped that I was. All hyped up and stuff. I was like, bro, I had no idea I was going to be, you know, a part of it. And I was like, bro, this is awesome. This is a big checklist. So I went out and bought it. I still have the hard copy saved. And then same thing with 24. Like, if you're in 23 and you're still with the company, you're going to be in the next one. So I was like, oh, man, this is sick. So I checked that off, but I had no idea. And 2K, they did an awesome job with my tattoos. I did not have like any idea how good like my tattoos were gonna look and my gear. And I was like, well, they don't have any pictures of my gear and they don't have pictures of my tattoos. And I was like, how are they gonna make this work? And I was like, I'm definitely not in the game. And then boom, I'm in the game and everything looks the exact same. And I was like, that was kind of like a moment to be thankful. I don't know if I pinched myself, but I definitely took a second, like sat there, and I was like, "Oh, this is cool!" Like, because like you sign with a company, like you don't expect you expect it to be the best. Like you want, like that's human nature. You want to be the best in everything you do. But it's like when you get the opportunity to be in a video game, like growing up, like you playing video games, and now you're in a game. It's just like, damn, you know. I was like, something real cool to be thankful for. Same thing with the cards, and that nature. I was like, this is pretty cool, and so. Sadly, I didn't get an action figure. I was hoping to get an action figure. But no, it's getting, so it's like in a way, well, the kids can't lie. When I have kids, they can't deny I wasn't in a video game. So I got that proof.
Yeah, right?
But that's pretty much how I found out about the cards in the game. But, you know, but it's cool. It's awesome. Something to be really thankful for.
Yeah, it is really cool. And, I have seen you online on social media. So what has it been like for you to be able to connect with the fans outside of WWE NXT, especially when it comes to those fans that collect ring-worn gear? How have those interactions been for you? Because there's a lot of fans out there that when someone is, you know, still part of the company, they want the gear that like you wore on TV.
Yes. I sell it. I sell it. I have so many singlets. So thankfully I was like, you know, coming from the amateur wrestling background, I made a lot of great connections with great people. And like, this is fortunate enough. A lot of them were making gear and singlets for like colleges. So, and they never charged me for them or anything. So like, I would have a bunch of singlets, you know, a few of them were charging me, but it wasn't much as just a singlet. And then they would do a great job, make my singlets and stuff like that. So I think what I would always try to do is just like try to have as many different singlets on deck. Just so it's like a different look every time, you know? So I have a bunch of like, you know, I got the Diamond Mine singlet still saved. I have the red one I wore in the ambulance match. I got the one I spray painted and ripped up, you know, once I made the Diamond Mine, the turn on the Diamond Mine. So I got like a lot of like, all those shoes are like, and singlets are just, you know, saved. So hopefully one day I might put some on display. But, you know, I've sold a few. You know, I don't mind doing it. You know, it's, you know, if, you know, it's always rewarding. It's always rewarding to get a message and like say like, hey, we would like to buy your gear. Because like before, like I said before, like you come into a company and you don't really expect something like that. And then like when people want to like buy your stuff, it's like, all right, it's cool they want to have, one, have my stuff on their wall. And then two, it's also cool that, you know, I did a good job on making that connection for wanting them to spend their hard-earned money on me. But it's something like I can't take for granted. You know, it's something to be thankful for, you know, but it's just like I have a lot of singlets that are just sitting there gathering dust. I can't wear them anymore because, you know, I'm no longer a damn account. So they're just sitting there. You know, I also just bought, a few months before my exit, I had like a nice, cool armored vest. You know, I had that personal, I wore it like twice. I had a personally made you know, to fit my dimensions and everything. So I only got to wear that one time. It's just sitting there now. I'm not sure what I would do with it. I don't know if I'd put it on display or like, you know, auction or sell it off to someone. But yeah, no, it was just a slow revolution of like trying to change, like have a different look every time. So that way, like the more gear you have, the more action figures you might have, you know? No, that's that.
Yeah, no, and that's incredible. And, you know, your ring gear always looked incredible and now it's sought after, which is incredible to, you know, see. And I've seen you on social media when, you know, you have posted gear up for sale. And I always think that that's, you know, really cool that the wrestlers come into the collector community pages as themselves and be like, hey, I've got ring gear for sale if anyone's interested.
Yeah, no, it's always cool to try to get out of there. Then whatever, you know, you get off it, just buy more stuff with it.
Yeah.
Continuous cycle.
Yeah. And I mean, as you can see, I'm a collector behind me. So
I see it all. Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I got all sorts of action figures and stuff behind me from, I also collect ring worn gear. So maybe we can talk after this. And
hey, we can get it up. I got everything in the closet right now.
And, and for, you know, fans to be able to reach out and get a hat and a t-shirt, you can DM Bobby directly.
All right, I'll answer.
When it came to getting advice, who were go-tos for you within NXT?
So I always tried to avoid, told by different people. You know, just like when you do a match, you know, wrestling is kind of subjective. You know, you might think something's cool. I might think something's stupid. You know, so I try to avoid, you know, after coming back from the curtain, asking so many people, you know, what their advice was. Because then it's just like you're just bouncing your head around, you're stressing yourself out. Like you did, and then it takes away from you being happy from what you just did. So, like, what I eventually just learned from, you know, if Shawn Michaels is happy, you know, you're good. You know, if your producer's happy with what you just did, you're good. No need to bounce around and ask 50 people on what they thought. And then, because essentially you're just looking to hear the negative. You know, it's human nature. We're like, I can tell you 20 good things, but the one bad thing I tell you, that's going to stick with you. You're like, oh man, this guy thought, yeah, my punches look bad, man. But Sean just told me my match is good. He didn't like it all. He enjoyed it all. The bad thing's going to stick in my head. So it's like, I think a lot of people just got to get away from like the asking the whole room on what they thought instead of just being. And I noticed that too. Like the few times I got to go up on Raw and be around those top guys, you know, they do their match, they come back, they talk to the producer, they get whatever input they have. Triple H gives them or William Regal, and then they, you know, go back to the locker room. And I was like, oh, that's kind of the way to kind of do it, just so like you avoid the, you know, the headache of bouncing around and the human nature of wanting to hear something negative. And then you focus on the negative, you don't care about the positive. And so that was one thing I was focused on, just to like, you know, the people in charge that are running the show are happy with their ego.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
88% of the work week is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences. Whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
You know, take it and go home.
That is incredibly well said. And, you know, when it comes to that, you got to work a lot of different events, not just NXT, but, you know, you work 205 Live, Level Up, WWE Main Event, and you even got to go over to England and work NXT UK a little bit. Mm-hmm. Were there any takeaways from any of those shows?
I kind of learned, when I was with Robbie Brookside, he always mentioned Johnny Saint. And he would always show us Johnny Saint videos, how he was like creative, little twists and turns, getting out of holds. You know, with my amateur wrestling, I was drawn to that because it looked so fascinating and like so technical. I was always a technical wrestler in high school and college. So I was like, man, I can implement that in my wrestling. And so when I got over to the UK, a few of them were pretty technical. And it was also kind of cool because I got to train with Johnny Saint for the time that I was there, just like learn different stuff and, you know, pick his brain and then, you know, just try to implement it any way I can in the how I wrestled. But no, going over there, you know, I was only like 7 months in, so I'm not going to act like I know stuff. You know, like I was still new, still learning. So I went over there and I figured out that I was there for like a week and they filmed 3 episodes during that time. And I found out I did 3 matches, you know, new guy, 7 months in, you're doing 3 matches in 2 days. I'm still learning. So I was like, crap, here we go. Let's do it. And, you know, I'm a gamer. So I'm like, I'm locked in on what I got to do. And so with that, you know, I wrestled a match, you know, then like a few matches later, I got to wrestle another one. And so the match I did, I wrestled, I forgot his name. It was my first match. It was like a small little story within the 3 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrestled a guy. They had me go over and then just build something with Shaw Samuels and Noam Dar, which they were a group in the UK. Wrestled Shaw Samuels, and the same day we did a tag match. It was me and Wolfgang, and we did like a bunch of like vignettes in the same day too, like driving around England and like drinking and like filming the vignette. Like we were drunk at the bar. Like I'm the American, Wolfgang the drunk from Scotland or whatever. And it was cool too because we were actually drinking the beer. We were actually drinking the beer in the vignettes. So it was like, all right. It was so laid back and like relaxed. Cause like we literally just went to a pub. Look at me calling it a pub. We went to a pub. We went to a pub. You know, there's people in there and we were just like, we needed some props. We needed some beer, like some glasses of beer to make it look like we were drinking. And I was like, slurring my words. And it was funny too, because like, we were like, should we have some glasses, you know, filled with beer? And they were like, yeah, let's do it. And so what we did was we drank like 4 or 5 beers on camera, you know, just drinking them. And then just like, no one was drunk or anything. It was just like, just to actually like him and I were both so invested in what we had to do. So it's just like, why not actually get into it? Yeah. You know, so we were actually like into the character, like actually it wasn't apple juice. We were actually drinking beer and no one was drunk. It was all just acting. And it was just cool to see, because like he's been doing it for so long that he was like open to like to see him, how long he was doing. I was a new guy, and him seeing how invested he was in the story, the short story that we had with him and I, and then me being the new guy, it's like, all right, I'm all in. Plus I like to have a little beer. And so we're just having the beer, you know, just slurring the words, you know, whatever, while we're filming, while the pub is actually filled with people and people are just drinking around us. So that was really cool. And so like doing the two matches a day, no, it was good, but it was just like, you know, like I wanted to make sure, you know, I was being sent over there for a reason, you know, it's a great opportunity and I didn't want to crap on my opportunity. So I took it real serious. So it's like, I did one match, you know, while they were filming, you know, I had to immediately go back, and it was me and Wolf versus Norm Dar and Shaw Samuels. You know, those guys have been doing it forever. So they really helped me out in like structuring the match, making it easy for a guy that was only doing it for 7 months. And so I did a match, you know, went great, came back. We were up again in like five matches. And I just memorized that first match, and I got to come back and do another one. And I was like, all right, cool, let's run it. And someone got hurt, and then it pushed us up to go, you know, go a little sooner. Went out there, did the match, we killed it. It was fun. It was easy. It was a great match. And UK fans, they're pretty cool. It was like, it was funny too, because like when I first started, I was like, I would always jump out and yell and spit water, you know, a little Triple H. And the first time I did it, I spat some water and like the AC was going, and like the AC kind of caught the mist and put it under the crowd. And the crowd, they seemed to like, they enjoyed it. And I was like, oh, you guys like being, you know, little missed. I was like, all right, cool. So first match I did that. Second match that came out before, because it was like a, like the walls, and you walk out and there's fans right here. So what I do is I'll purposely come out and scream. Like, I'd run on the front row, someone would boo, and someone would like enjoy it. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, and I just continued doing it. Built a little relationship, you know, by spitting water on people. But no, it was cool being over in the UK, because like I got to travel around for amateur wrestling, and then it's like, okay, now I'm traveling for pro wrestling. I've only been doing it for 7 months. You know, it's a pretty cool opportunity. And I'm like, it was great. So the only thing I didn't like about being over there is having to walk everywhere.
Yeah.
I had to walk everywhere. I was like, man, I hate walking. The bus would take us back and forth to the arena, but when it came to like getting our own food, you know, we had to like walk to like the grocery store and carry our bags back. And I was like, bro, I'm not trying to be doing this, dude. So I think I ate Chipotle like every day, and then just like saved half of it for lunch, for dinner. And then just saved it. And then, and then the Uber XL that we have here in America isn't the Uber XL in the UK. That thing was like a little Kia that came and picked us up. It was like a Kia that picked us up, and there was like, I think there was like five of us, and we didn't know, so we had to like split off and like get in the Ubers and stuff like that. And the trunks weren't even big enough to hold two people's luggage. And on top of that, we're like sitting on the I'm sitting in the passenger seat that's on, you know, that's on the opposite side of here in America. We're driving on the opposite side of the road, and the streets are like, you're literally mirror to mirror. Like, yeah. Everything is so tight. Like, literally, stick your hand out the window, you're going to get your hand smoked by a car. So, overall, it was great. It was, like, it was so cool to, like, see a different side of the world with only being in the company for 7 months. And then, you know, the room was, like, weird. It was, like, small, you know? So, it's, like, my bed was small, and then my kitchen was in the bedroom. And then I take two steps from the foot of the bed, and I'm in the bathroom, and I'm like, I'm like, oh crap, this is tight. And then on top of it, I was one of the first ones there, and I was looking for the thermostat, and I was like, bro, it's hot in this room. Where's the AC? There's no thermostat on the wall. So I go downstairs. And I was like, hey miss, you know, there's no AC. Where's the AC thing? I see a heater in the room, but there's not an AC button. And it's all, oh, no, here in the UK, we don't really do air conditioning. I was like, bro. I was like, ma'am, I traveled all the way from the U.S. I didn't come all the way over here to sweat while I'm sleeping. I was like, is there a room with AC? She's like, well, we do have a few rooms with ACs. And I was like, can you please put me in there before anyone else comes? Because like, I think like the UK talent weren't there yet. Thankfully, I got a room with AC. And I was like, oh, thank goodness, because I guess during the time I was there, it was like a heat wave, because it was like 75 degrees over there. And I guess it doesn't normally get that hot over there, so it was a heat wave. And it was hot, but thankfully I got some AC, so we were good. But no, it was definitely a cool experience, and it was fun. You know, It was a great time. Didn't hang out with everyone, go out with everyone, and just to see a different part of the world, see a different talent and what they've done to get to that position that they're in.
Yeah, that's awesome. I remember London. All anyone that had ever been over there told me was just go to Piccadilly Circle to hang out, because it was like it's like New York City's it was like New York City, basically, all the lights and stores and all that. It was like the touristy area, really, is what it was. But yeah, everything you're saying, like I'm laughing because I remember. I was like, yep, I remember the small room. Yep, I remember there was no AC. So I was like, I remember all that. And really, really cool. Awesome to like hear about that experience. What was like the locker room? Like, what, you know, how was it, you know, being part of the locker room in WWE?
That was good. That was good. you just have some people with different experiences and stuff like that. But I never had anything. I thought it was great. Everyone kind of helped out one another. You slowly start to find your niche of people who to hang out with and like who you socialize with and stuff like that. So everyone kind of finds their own niche. But I would say it was good. It was good.
Oh, very cool. And one of the things you brought up was being part of your first PLE, which was NXT Halloween Havoc in the ambulance match. How excited were you to get to be part of your first PLE and it being one of your feuds where you turn heel?
Yeah. So it wasn't supposed to be me doing the turn. It's supposed to be Roderick Strong. And so like the whole thing, if you go watching, it was like, I don't know, like a 7 month program or 6 month program. And so it was always, we were always just like planting the seeds, the story wise, it was always Roderick Strong's fault on why we were losing and why were we being cheated and stuff like that. And so it was never supposed to be me in the match. And I think he was having a neck issue at the time, like a legit neck issue. I could be wrong, but that's what I just heard. And so we were doing everything. We built everything up to put for the big break to be on Roderick Strong, and everything falls on him. And so it was like it was the night before we were filming the backstage. And then we had some people come in. They were like, hey, we're going to have Damon do the change. He's turning heel. At the time, you know, I wasn't upset, but it's just like, also like, I wasn't upset. It was like, you ever heard the term of like, you don't know what's on the other side of the wall. Like, you're given the elephant's tail, but on the side of the wall is the whole elephant. You know, you don't know what's on the other side. So I took it and I was like, dang, man, I was just in the group. We were doing great things. You know, now I'm turning on you guys. And it's just like, all right, well, like, do they not like the story or whatever? You know, I was holding the elephant's tail. The whole elephant was on the other side of the wall. Plus, it was a good opportunity. So they're like, hey, we're going to have Damon change at Worlds Collide. You know, that's when I hit Julius in the back with the chair. Supposed to be rather strong. And so, like, we built the whole thing and everything. So I did the turn. And then, like, the next few weeks, we had to, like, essentially undo everything we did for 7 months, but make it look like I did it. So, like, with the stuff with, like, the D'Angelo family, you know, it was essentially, like, Roderick was paying him off in the match. If you go back and watch it, you'll see some key points at the end of the match. And it was supposed to be Roderick's fault. So, that we went back and, like, kind of circled up everything. So, original story was I was coming in to help the Creed brothers win because they were, story-wise, they were always getting so close they couldn't break it. So, like, oh, Roderick Strong, he brought in amateur wrestler. This blah, 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 blah. He's going to help the Creeds win. Creeds win the tag title. Thanks to me. And so, like, we had to undo a lot of things. But it worked out great. They covered it all. We hit it all out of the park. And so then we went in to do that. And it was great. But I was like, man, we were doing good. You know, like, I don't want to leave the group yet. But it is what it is. But it worked out great. So the first PLE, We built it up and things of that nature. And then, you know, we were going to be told it's an ambulance match. And I was like, well, there hasn't been many ambulance matches in WWE, so there's not much to watch, you know, to get ideas from. And so we had a lot of fun ideas, like such as like we were gonna try to start the match off with like doing the pre-tape of me hitting Julius, me driving the ambulance and hitting Julius. That's how we were planning to start the match off, but it just didn't work out. And then we were trying to have the ambulance. It was tough too because like the way the performance center is set up, you can't fit an ambulance in there raining. So we like literally had to park it like out like right outside the building, but we had like a long walk path. We had to cover a lot of ground to like get there. And so we had to make it look like we weren't actually walking to something. We're all casually walking, oh, here's the ambulance. But we had to like actually fight through the, you know, I think it was like, I don't know, guess it was like 100 feet. We had like a fight 100 feet, but slowly make our way to it without making it look like, you know, oh, here we go, you know. And did that. It was great, you know. It was a, I think it was something that elevated us both, you know. But I think one thing I kind of, if I were to redo some things, look back on, would have been, you know, obviously they didn't know, we didn't know that, you know, I was going to be doing the ambulance match. So if I would have known that, I would have thought it would have been a little better, just like build me up a little bit more as a babyface. Cause like you watch the matches that me and Roderick Strong tagged with against like Pretty Deadly and the Legatos. We always just did a thing where I was like, getting beat up, and I come over to him, he'll slap me in the face, and I'd, you know, hulk up a little bit and go crazy. So we were getting a good feed off the crowd with that. And we were getting good feedback from the crowd. And then I was just like, all right, now we got to stop and change the direction. I was like, ah, man, I was like, if we were able to build me up as a baby face even more, how loud would that pop would have been when I hit the chair? Because if you look back on the picture, you look back on like NXT's page on their reels, I had like a few million like views on that reel. It was like their most popular reel for like months. You know, this was like Mandy Rose was there, and like everyone else was like that were real popular. That video of the turn was getting more views than all of them. And I was like, all right, we got something cool. We both elevated each other in a way. You know,
yeah.
Breaking off. I mean, I think we paid the story great success, you know, the way we capped it off. But no, it was great. You know, we had like with the pay-per-views, they gave you like, you know, here at the Performance Center, they give you like a week or two to like kind of plan it, you know. So it was easy. So it was fun, but yeah.
Awesome. And you've brought up Diamond Mine, and you were also part of the Quarter Catch crew. So what was it like for you to be in both factions? And was there one that you enjoyed possibly being in more than the other?
It's been, essentially, they're the same. I thought they were the same. You know, they're both crazy amateur wrestlers. You know, the thing we were trying to do in No Quarter was like Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey. They're kind of like the catch wrestling. So essentially, it's kind of the same as like amateur wrestling, but you're just doing the wrestling holds and the you know, the grappling and the wrist locks and all that, ankle lock, different type of holds. So essentially, it was kind of the same. But the Creeds, they started to do like, they changed their style. They're big, you know, big move guys, big throws, big good stuff. And then No Quarter was more so just like, keep your 2 feet on the ground. We stand our ground. We grapple. We tussle around. So that way they were kind of the same. But, you know, I enjoyed working with both groups. They're both fun. But I think I enjoyed more working with the No Quarter Catch crew because me and Miles Bourne, we got pretty close. And we also just got real pretty close too, just when it came to like doing live events. Him and I would always drive together, you know, I drive, he drives, you know, we're in the car for, like driving to Jacksonville or Tampa, you know, after a show, you know, just building a relationship with him and I just in the car. You know, so I think I enjoyed it more because we got to know each other more so on the outside of wrestling, you know, versus like seeing each other for like only like 3 hours a day. But and we built a pretty good relationship. So I joked with the I enjoyed No Quarter time, but they're both great. They're both great groups.
Awesome. And one of the other things you brought up was the Heritage Cup. Did you prefer wrestling with the Heritage Cup rules, or did you prefer just a regular one-on-one match?
I'd rather do the one-on-one match. I didn't the rounds match. I didn't. It was fine. You know, it was easy, but I just prefer the one-on-one stuff. We were trying to pitch some stuff because like we were doing like the no catch clause, where it's just like our opponent doesn't know who they're wrestling until we get out there. We would do a thing where we stand in the ring, and so and so was wrestling. Three of us would step back. The one that's wrestling stands for. So we were. I was trying to pitch. We were all trying to pitch some things where, you know, since it's a round match and we're healed, you know, what if it's something where we each wrestle a round, you know? So it's like, Miles starts the first round, you know, we cheat in a way, you know, I start the second round, a new fresh guy versus a guy that's already worn out. So our heels were cheating, or also, you know, twisting the rules of the round matches to like, kind of like trick them. Like, oh, you don't know who you're wrestling at the start of the match. Then you don't know. You also don't know who you're wrestling in the third or fourth rounds of the match. So we were trying to pitch some stuff like that, but it just didn't fall through. But we were getting pretty creative to like how to make those rounds matches more interesting to the American audience, because I know it was big in the UK, but it was just like how to make it more interesting in America that fans could get into it. Like great, they're great matches, but it's just like, you know. If you're watching, you know, the North American title match, you're going to be more into that match because you know the rules. You don't have to, like, look up at the board. Oh, yeah, there's three rounds, one round pinned, you know, you got this much break. You got, like, every time a Heritage Cup match comes on, there's always on the screen, there's, like, just, like, eight different rules. So you try to familiar a kid with what the rules are of a Heritage Cup match versus, like, you know, just a regular North American title match. So it was like hard to, you know, try to like get fans into it. You know, they'll get into it at the end because they know what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
Because like someone's got to do something. They'll get it towards the end, but like the first and second round, it would like be like dead silent, or like third round or like dead silent, because it's like the feeling out. And you're also trying to build the story and build it up, tell the story between each round. But yeah, it was big. From what I've known, it's huge in the UK, but in the United States, it was like, you know, it was on a few pay-per-views with Noam Dar. He did crazy, like crazy good work representing that cup and just making the matches so exciting. But it's just like, all right, you know, does it reach a certain level of, all right, we already know we got to read this whole board, you know, before the match. So I would have preferred just the typical one-on-one matches.
Understandable. And I mean, those Heritage Cup matches are they're unique and interesting and different. And that twist that you brought up, man, I don't know if you saw, but my jaw dropped as soon as you said it, because that'd be a heck of a twist on that kind of a match.
So if when this interview drops and you see them do that in a few weeks, it's my idea.
Yeah, we're gonna know where the idea came from. It's gonna be all over the dirt sheets,
because I was like, dude, that would have been crowd of them went crazy. It's like, oh man, these freaking guys are cheating. Like they're switching in and out. Like this guy doesn't have a chance, you know. Then the babyface somehow overcomes it and he beats the whole group or whatever, you know. So we do see that we're marking it here.
Yeah.
Is my idea.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. When it comes to the independent scene, have you made a list or anything of anyone that you want to work with, or have thought of anyone on the independent scene that you would like to wrestle?
There's a few. So I had a few bookings, but I had to go back to Minnesota. My girlfriend, her grandparent, her grandma unfortunately passed away. So I had to be there for her, and I had to be there, you know, be a good boyfriend and be there for her and her family. So I was going to wrestle on MLW. I had like three bookings with MLW. They wanted to like build a story with them. But, you know, at the time, you know, it's like no one's prepared to get let go, you know, randomly. So I didn't have gear, Bobby Stevenson gear. All my stuff had Damon Kemp on it. And I didn't want to disrespect anyone's company, you know, wearing my old stuff, you know, when I'm not that person anymore. Just to get the paycheck and just to get my name out there. So I wanted to respect MLW. that way. So I didn't want to show up with like Damon Kemp stuff. So I had to wait for my gear to get made. And you already know how it goes, you know, getting gear made. You know, everyone's, yeah, man, we'll have it next week. Oh no, next week. You know, 2 months down the road, like, bro, I lost all my opportunities now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't lose them, but it was just like still some up in the air. Both like, yeah, I had some bookings with them. I had a few other ones. And I finally got my wrestling gear. I'm ready to go and whatever. And so it's just like timing thing. It kind of screwed me up because like, you know, all the shows they book their matches like months in advance.
Yeah.
So yeah. I was like, dang, all these cards already filled, you know, whatnot. And, you know, I didn't come from the indie background. So it wasn't like I can like call a promoter, hey bro, you know, I'm no longer with WWE, mind if I come back to the show? I didn't have that. So it was just like, it doesn't hurt in any way, but it's like I've been doing a lot of stuff in the meantime. You know, got some music coming. I'm starting my own wrestling club, amateur wrestling club, Steveson Wrestling. I'm doing that here in Central Florida every Sunday. Every Sunday, starting the 27th, it'll be 6 to 7:30. Now, my main goal with that is I've always had a passion of you know, wrestling, and unfortunately in college, I was just burnt out. You know, I did it for so long at a high level, and I was just, you know, the weight cut, and you know, it happens. You get burnt out. You know, you got to move on. You got to move forward. And so, like, coaching, I've always enjoyed coaching. I always see myself as a great coach. I always coached my brother when he wrestled on the world teams. And I went to Slovakia and Sarajevo. I was going to go to the Olympics. And I coached at a few high schools and stuff like that. So I always had great joy in coaching and just being around kids and building that relationship. My dad always coached me and Gable growing up. So we have, like, a great connection, you know, coaching-wise. But then you also get into high school and college. We are around coaches, you know, that can make that have made positive, you know, impacts on my life, you know, like how I live my life now, you know, they have a great impact on it. So I was like, man, if I can, you know, start my own thing, you know, use my last name, you know, and then have the ability to, like, with the training that I've got from my dad and, like, you know, University of Minnesota and being overseas and, like, being around the top wrestlers in the world and everything that I have learned, you know, like, why not give back? You know, so starting the 27th, every Sunday, me running my own wrestling practice. It's open to everyone in Central Florida. You know, I just want to, like, help out. Like, I know in Florida, wrestling for sure is not the first sport for everyone. And everyone's football and baseball, rightfully so. And so it's like, for me, you know, it's an opportunity to do something that's not being done right now. You know, for me to start it, you know, build relationships with kids, you know, coach them. You know, when there's an opportunity to coach them and also have the ability to make a positive impact on their life, you know, not only, you know, just to be a great, you know, be a good coach, but you also got to be a good person to them, you know, show them how to be a good person on the outside of the wrestling room, you know, how to treat people, how to be a good son, you know, how to be a good grandson, you know, brother, sister, or whatever, you know, like, it's an opportunity to, like, really, you know, plant seeds on kids at a young age, because, you know, this day and age, we all know there's a lot of crazy stuff that goes on in this world and a lot of negativity. So it's just like, if I can provide like 2 hours of positivity or like joy on someone's weekend, you know, to like keep them going, keep them motivated, you know, have a positive mind, you know, just, you know, in the world, you know, it'd be something I'd really enjoy doing.
That's absolutely amazing. I still talk to my high school wrestling coach, and it's 20 years later. Mm-hmm. He had that big of an impact.
Yeah.
That, you know, he's still talking to students 20, 25 years ago. So to hear that's incredible. Really incredible to hear, you know, especially with all the positivity, because the world there's a lot of negative going on in the world. So just that little bit, you know, that just like sparked me up and like brought a big smile on my face. I appreciate that. That's really great to hear. And if there's any fans out there that, you know, are in that area that want to know where they can meet up for that, are they able to DM you or anything? How can they get a hold
of you? So you can either, like, I have everything in my bio. I try to make it really easy for everyone. So I always hated to like do a bunch of crap to get info. So I just keep everything in my bio. You can message me on the my personal or the wrestling page. I'll get back with you. So yeah, who it's really open to everyone. If people want to fly down and like come practice or whatever, if people are in the area or have tournaments, you know, like it's open to everyone. So that's the thing too, because I don't want to get caught up in like the, you know, I'm sure you know it too, like the amateur world. You know, everyone's trying to like pull someone from somewhere. You know, so oh, they got a good kid, come over here. We're gonna pull you in. We're gonna take you to my school, make you transfer over. I'm not trying to get into that. You know, I'm not trying to deal with all that headache stuff. I just want a place where I can build my brand, you know, make great wrestlers and great people, and, you know, it's an opportunity for me to build something for myself with how I'm still young. And so if people want to come through, I do private lessons too. I've been doing private lessons since I was like, you know, in high school. I've been running private lessons, I do a lot on the weekends here with a few kids that I've been working with ever since they were like in, you know, elementary school. You know, now they're sophomores and juniors in high school. I'm like, well, it's kind of cool to like see everyone grow and like still have the connection with the parents and stuff like that, and then see that they trust you to work with their kids, you know. So yeah, so message the Instagram page, you know, Stevenson Wrestling, or you can message my personal, just info. There are flyers posted. Like I said, I try to make it as simple as possible for everyone to follow.
Awesome. And I will have links in the descriptions for everybody as well. Bobby, would you ever do a death match? Would you ever think about doing one of those? I know when Matt Cardona left WWE, he reinvented himself to become even the deathmatch king.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be a match that, you know, you know, on the independent scene try?
I don't know, bro. I don't know if I'm into getting hit with 2x4s and
light bulbs. Yeah, right.
Yeah, no, I'll save that for a certain group. Sorry, certain people. But no, awesome. I'd like to do the blood sport. Yeah, I like GCW, blood sport. Okay. I enjoy watching those, just like get out there and like make it look legit, you know, and actually be able to like move people around and, you know, do whatever it is, kind of like MMA style without actually killing people. So yeah, that's something I'd like to, you know, get into.
Awesome. Bobby, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to speak with me today. Fans, remember, if you want to get a hat, get a shirt, you can DM Bobby directly. Bobby, what is your social so that they can do all that?
Yeah, social media account is Bobby Stevenson. That's my main page. And then my other account with my Stevenson Wrestling, all wrestling content is Stevenson Wrestling. I got a Facebook, but I don't really post on Facebook. That's for old people. I only use Facebook for Marketplace. But yeah, follow me on Facebook for more stuff. Twitter, you know, I use Twitter every so often. You know, I'm always reading. But yeah, those are the main points to get in contact with me. Feel free to like send me a message too. You know, I'm pretty open to, you know, replying to people if they're interested in like merchandise or, you know, whatever, you know, so don't hesitate with that.
Yeah, so fans, go pick yourself up a hat, pick yourself up a shirt, and remember, spoiler freeze, the way to be. We're out.
See you guys.